My haven was the rooftop pool. At the end of a long day of school and constant deadlines, nothing was more wonderful than a late-night swim under the stars. The water was refreshing, the city lights sparkled in the distance, and for once, I had the pool to myself, or so I believed. I wet my toes in the water, basking in the silence. The lights on the pool gave a gentle, soothing glow, and the distant hum of the city below seemed a million miles away. I plunged in, the water closing over me like a second skin. For a few minutes, I swam laps. The beat of my strokes was drowning out the tension of the day. That was when I heard it, a faint splash. I stopped mid-stroke, treading water as I scanned my surroundings. The pool deck was empty, with the chairs neatly stacked and the umbrellas closed. I told myself it was probably just my imagination. I shook it off and kept swimming. But then, I saw them. Wet footprints were leading away from the pool. My stomach dropped. I was supposed to be alone up here. I had made sure of it. I climbed out of the water, wrapping myself tightly in a towel, and scanned the dimly lit deck. There was nothing. There was no one. That was when I noticed that my phone was gone. I spun around with my heart pounding hard in my chest. My breathing quickened as I tried to make sense of what was happening. Then, I saw him. A man standing near the pool's mechanical room, half hidden in the shadows. He was standing there, watching me.
Hey!
I shouted, with my voice shaking.
What the hell are you doing, creep?
He did not say a word. Instead, he walked slowly to the other end of the pool and dove in, disappearing beneath the surface. I did not wait to see if he would come back up. I grabbed my stuff and bolted for the exit gate, with my bare feet slapping against the wet tiles. When I reached the gate, I grabbed the handle and yanked it hard. It was locked. I froze, with panic flooding my chest. I was certain I had left it open. Before I could process what was happening, something yanked my towel from behind, sending me sprawling forward into the water. I hit the surface hard, with a rush of cold water filling my nose. I kicked frantically, trying to reach the surface, but hands grabbed my ankles, pulling me down. I thrashed wildly with my heart pounding in my ears. My lungs burned as I fought to break free. A figure clamped a hand over my mouth, holding me underwater. I elbowed them as hard as I could, and their grip loosened just enough for me to break the surface. I scrambled onto the pool deck, gasping for air. I coughed violently, with water pouring from my mouth. But I could not stop. The figure was already out of the water, stalking toward me. The chase was a blur. I slipped and slid across the wet tiles, barely avoiding his lunges. My mind raced as I searched for a weapon, anything I could use. I grabbed a pool pole and swung it with all my strength, clipping his shoulder. He stumbled, but he recovered quickly, smashing through a glass divider in an attempt to cut me off. I sprinted across the perimeter of the pool, my breath ragged, my heart pounding. The wet tiles made every step treacherous. I slipped again, crashing hard against a row of deck chairs. Pain shot through my knee, but I scrambled to my feet, adrenaline pushing me forward. He was relentless. I could hear his footsteps slapping against the wet ground, getting closer with every second. I hurled a chair in his path, buying myself a few seconds as he stumbled over it. My vision blurred from the panic and the tears welling in my eyes, but I kept moving. The service door was my only way out. I limped toward it, my heart pounding in my chest, and managed to yank it open. I did not look back and just ran. The cops came, of course. They scanned the pool area with flashlights, searching every corner, but they found nothing. All they found was a pair of rubber gloves and a roll of duct tape submerged underwater. Whoever this guy was, he had planned this. He had been waiting for me. I sat on the edge of the ambulance, shivering under a blanket as an EMT checked my arm. My hands were still shaking. I tried to answer the officer's questions, but my mind kept drifting back to his face, or the lack of it. His features had been obscured by the shadows, but those eyes were something I would never forget. I'm glad I made it out alive. I know how lucky I am. But every time I close my eyes, I see his shadowy figure stalking toward me. I see the way he moved with calm precision like he had done this before. I wonder if he's still out there, waiting for another chance. I don't go to the rooftop pool anymore. I can barely walk past the building without feeling a knot of fear in my chest. I keep my doors locked and double-check my windows every night, but even with all of that, I can't shake the feeling that he's watching me. Somewhere out there, he's waiting. Hi, I'm Ed. My best friend Nate invited us to his 16th birthday party. The party was happening at his dad's luxurious farmhouse. Being the richest kid in school, Nate was the star of high school. Even though he had everything, he lacked one thing for sure. It was manners. He never hesitated for a second before insulting someone. The next day at the party, I was enjoying free booze and snacks when Nate came up to me. We were joking around when a short, thin-built waiter came to us with mocktails. We both grabbed one each. I watched him taking just one sip and then he smashed the glass on the floor. Everyone stopped and turned their heads at us. The waiter was shocked and nervous.
"Is that not to your liking, sir?"
Nate spat on him, yelling,
"You call this a drink? I said to add chia seeds and mint! Bloody moron can't even do a job well!"
The drinks were fine, to be honest, but it's Nate. Creating a scene is his hobby. The waiter cleaned the floor and left to get Nate's drink. Half an hour later, he came back with exactly what Nate asked for. Nate again took a sip of it, and this time he splashed it on the poor waiter. He even laughed at this cruel amusement. Everyone else laughed with him too. I stood on the side, feeling really bad for the guy. The waiter wiped his face and asked,
"Why did you do that?"
Nate grabbed him by the collar and muttered,
"Because my daddy paid for your uniform! Now get lost!"
The waiter stood there for a minute, staring at Nate with bloodshot eyes. I could tell something snapped in him, but he didn't give any reaction. Left quietly like the first time. Nate went back to partying. We had cake and everyone started to leave one by one. I was thinking to go home as well because I was pissed off at him too. I decided I'll avoid him from now on because having money doesn't give you the right to treat people like crap. Seeing me get up to leave, Nate said,
"Oh, come now, you have to stay here tonight. Gina and Priya's staying back too."
He smirked as he knew I had a crush on Priya. I saw Priya coming out of the changing room in her pink swimsuit, and I thought, well, I did decide to ignore Nate from tomorrow. It was around midnight, and just the four of us were hanging in the pool. I was enjoying myself when my eyes caught something behind a bush. That same waiter was crouched down behind a bush and watching us. He watched us for a minute straight, then vanished into the darkness. I was thinking of telling Nate about this, but by the time, Nate and Gina had started to play the holding breath underwater game. Gina stayed for a few seconds, then came out, gasping. Priya laughed and cheered. I refused to play because all I could think about was, where did that waiter go? I watched Nate counting to five and then diving underwater. 5 seconds went by. 10 seconds went by. 30 seconds went by, but Nate still didn't come up. Now, when a minute went by and Nate still didn't show, we all got very worried. Suddenly, the water in the pool started to move, like it was put into draining mode. I watched Gina dipping into the pool and then resurfacing with a blood-curdling scream.
"Oh God! He's stuck! He's drowning!"
I dived in and saw a horrible sight. Nate was pinned to the drain by its powerful suction. He was screaming, but only air bubbles came out of his mouth. His hands were desperately searching for something to hold, but he could barely move his upper body. Seeing me, his eyes widened more in hope. I came up screaming,
"Everyone get out of this pool! Call the security!"
and went back in to save Nate. I grabbed his hand and started to pull. But the force of the suction was relentless. Nate's eyes were wide with terror, pleading with me. His fingers clawed at mine, slipping slightly with every desperate tug. The water around us churned violently, creating a current that made it nearly impossible to stay steady. I kicked my legs with all my strength, trying to create momentum, but it was like fighting against a steel grip. I surfaced briefly, gasping for air. Gina was sobbing hysterically, and Priya was frantically shouting for help. Two men in security uniforms came running toward the pool, one of them already pulling out a rescue hook. Without wasting another second, I dived back down. Nate's movements were getting weaker. His eyes, once wide with panic, were now starting to flutter. His face was turning pale, his lips tinged with blue. I hooked my arms under his and pushed against the pool floor with all my strength. Just as my lungs screamed for air, the security guard yanked Nate's legs with the hook, and with one final heave, we freed him from the drain's grip. We burst to the surface, both of us coughing and gasping. Nate clung to me weakly, his chest heaving, but he made it out alive. We were carried out of the pool by the security. Nate was rushed to the hospital for breathing troubles. I too spent the night at the hospital with him. When Nate's father asked the security about the draining process starting up on its own, no one could come up with a possible explanation. But I knew. I knew it was the waiter. Yet I stayed quiet about it. After that incident, Nate became one of my best friends. He helped me get into an Ivy League college, and his father paid for my fees. They told my parents that I saved Nate, so it's very little what they're doing for me. The waiter still works at Nate's father's estate. No one seemed to have a clue about what he did. The pool is quiet under the pale moonlight as the water ripples softly with the night breeze moving through the empty chairs. I check the clock on the wall and see that it's 10:45 p.m. Another shift has ended. I grab my backpack, sling it over my shoulder, and flick off the lights. The water turns dark and still. I lock the front gate and start heading home, with the crunch of gravel under my sneakers being the only sound. Halfway down the road, my chest tightens when I realize, damn it, I left my phone behind. I spin around and jog back, with my breath hanging in the cold night air. By the time I reach the gate, my pulse has slowed, but something feels off. The place feels heavier, as if I'm not supposed to be here. I unlock the gate and step inside. The overhead lights buzz softly as I flick them back on. The pool shimmers under the lights, but something about it feels wrong. As I head toward the lifeguard station, I hear something coming from the locker rooms. It sounds like a muffled and distant thud. I freeze for a moment, my heart pounding. I slowly move toward the sound. Another noise follows, something heavy being dragged. My stomach drops. I ease the women's locker room door open. I see her. Jess is lying face down on the wet tile, completely still. I feel like I can't breathe. My body wants to run, but my feet stay planted. I glance toward the back of the locker room, where the storage room door is slightly open. My heart drops when I see him step out, dragging a large bag behind him. I panic and duck into an open locker, trying not to breathe too loudly. My hands are shaking so badly that I can barely keep them over my mouth. Through the slats, I see him wearing dark clothes with his sleeves rolled up. He's calm as he ties Jess's body with a thick rope, moving as if he had done this before. My chest is burning, but I do not dare make a sound. He struggles to get her into the sack while I watch, frozen. My phone suddenly rings, loud and piercing. I fumble for it, my heart slamming in my chest. I manage to shut it off, but it's too late. His head snaps toward the row of lockers. He grabs a long, thin blade from his belt. My blood runs cold as he starts walking.
"I know you're in here," he says in a low voice.
My heart is pounding so loudly that I swear he can hear it. I bite down on my knuckle, trying not to breathe. The blade taps against the first locker, then the next. Each metallic clang feels like it is pounding in my chest. He keeps getting closer, moving methodically from one locker to the next. When he taps the locker right next to mine, my muscles are so tight they hurt. His shadow shifts as the metal door in front of me starts to move. I shove the door with everything I have, slamming it into his face with a sickening crack. He stumbles back, clutching his nose with blood dripping down his arm. I bolt immediately, hearing his footsteps pounding against the tile behind me. I burst into the hallway with my sneakers squealing on the wet floor. The pool deck stretches out ahead of me, wide open with no cover. My lungs are on fire, but I can hear him getting closer. I grab a metal pool skimmer off the wall and turn just as he reaches me. I swing as hard as I can, and the pole connects with his ribs. He grunts and falls to one knee. I do not wait. I sprint for the exit, my heart pounding so loudly that it fills my head. I almost make it, but his hand catches the back of my shirt. I crash to the ground, pain shooting through my side. I roll over just in time to see the blade glinting in the light. Desperate, I kick out, hitting him in the knee. He stumbles, giving me just enough time to scramble to my feet and run toward the storage area. I duck into the shadows, chest heaving and mind racing. He's coming, slow and steady.
"You're not getting out of here," he says. "You saw too much."
I spot a fire extinguisher on the wall. My hands are shaking as I grab it. As soon as he comes around the corner, I squeeze the lever. Foam blasts into his face. He howls, stumbling back and clawing at his eyes. Without thinking, I swing the extinguisher as hard as I can. It cracks against his head, and he drops to the floor. I back away, gasping for air. My phone is in my hands before I even realize it. I dial 911 with my fingers shaking so badly that I almost drop it. The cops show up in minutes. They cuff him while he's still bleeding, but he just stares at me with cold and empty eyes. They wheel Jess out in a body bag. I sit on the curb with my head in my hands, trying not to throw up. The next morning, the news is everywhere. Ex-boyfriend arrested for brutal pool murder. The anchor keeps talking. Police report the suspect, identified as Kyle Madsen, had a restraining order filed by the victim last month. Surveillance footage shows him hiding in the locker room and calling the victim repeatedly to lure her inside before attacking. I close my eyes. I can still hear the locker door slamming, the footsteps chasing me, and my breath, ragged and desperate. I know I will never forget it.